having a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Back toward the line here for Botker. Back for Vermette at the hash mark. Up top for Botker. Swings it near side for Ekman Larson. Shoots and scores.
The Jets' dream of a positive end to the 2015 calendar year went up in flames. Oliver Ekman Larson scoring the game-winning goal for the Arizona Coyotes, and the Jets falling 4-2 at the hands of the Coyotes on Thursday night. Happy New Year to all our listening audience, and welcome to the first Illegal Curve Hockey Show of 2016. Drew Mindell alongside Ezra Ginsberg. Richard Pollock is away from the program today and presumed sunburnt somewhere in the warm United States of America. Ezzy, Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, good to see you and all that. Peace, love, and joy to you.
Yeah, Happy New Year, Drew. It's great to be back here. We had about a week and a half off since our end of season Jets roundtable, but it's good to be back. Richie's still, as you mentioned, enjoying the last few days of the sun down there and where he is. Yeah. And it's, unfortunate that the first Jets game that we're going to be talking about in 2016 is a loss. But nonetheless, there's a couple of games coming up this weekend, and hopefully they're going to be able to get some points out of those two games.
Absolutely. Tonight at 9 p.m., you'll hear the game here on TSN 1290, the Jets and the Sharks from San Jose. And then tomorrow evening, I believe an 8 o'clock start, the Jets and the Ducks from Anaheim. All games available, of course, here on TSN 1290. We'll get you set for both those games on this three-hour edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News joins us in about 30 minutes' time. And later on in the program, Iceman Cometh, Eric Stevens of the OC Register newspaper, joins us to talk about the Ducks. We're on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news, of course, is IllegalCurve.com.
How were your holidays? Because this is your first holidays with your daughter, right?
Yes.
So it's a little bit different, being a father now, but how were they?
They were lovely, thank you. We were down with my in-laws in Kentucky, as I've been well documented that my wife and family are from down there in Kentucky, and it was a lovely time. As I said to you when we were having lunch before the show, I think I did pretty
great lunch, by the way.
A very good lunch. I pretty much did nothing for an entire week, which was quite relaxing. I feel refreshed and recharged, and I'm sure that after 3 hours of sitting here with you, that'll be completely gone altogether, and I'll be as drained and baggy-eyed as ever.
I think the Christmas season from Christmas Eve until like New Year's or the day after New Year's is all about just eating, drinking, maybe accomplishing a little bit, but just spending time with your friends and family. Like, I don't think you should really have to accomplish anything. So I think if you're able to just wear your sweatpants for 7 days and watch a little hockey and, have some good food and stuff like that with your friends and family, I think that's an accomplishment enough.
That's how
I feel.
And I definitely accomplished that mission over the past week. Let's get into the Jets and the Coyotes before we look ahead to this weekend. A game, and this I sound like a broken record, a game that the Winnipeg Jets dominated. They were clearly the better of the two teams on the ice. And yet again, undisciplined penalties come back to bite this team. At first, it was the leading goal, the 2-1 goal, that with Andrew Ladd in the penalty box, the Jets were able to tie it up. Adam Lowry got his second of the game, and then with Tyler Myers in the box serving an undisciplined penalty, Oliver Ekman Larson, that clip we played off the top, leading to the Coyotes' third goal. They added an empty netter, and 4-2, the Coyotes win. The Jets lose. They don't get that three-game winning streak that they've been looking for this year, and it's a disappointing effort for a team that was the better of the two teams on the ice, but ultimately 0 points in the bank.
Yeah, and Drew, you mentioned the penalties, and I think that has been the focus, and rightly so. Andrew Ladd takes that penalty at the end of the second period, and as you mentioned, Viktor Tikhonov scores for the Arizona Coyotes. Nice little waiver wire pickup for the Coyotes, but to me, it was really all about how they found another way to lose in a game where they badly outchanced and outshot the opposition. And we were talking about it, you know, I was doing the pre and post with Rick on New Year's Eve with Joel, and we were talking about it, how it really seemed like a similar type of outcome to the Edmonton game,
sure,
which was a week and a half before the New Year's Eve game, where the Jets completely dominated the Edmonton Oilers by whatever metric you want to use, if it was shot attempts, zone time, whatever. And the Jets had 29 shots after the first two periods on Arizona, and they only had one goal, which is remarkable. And you got to give a lot of credit to rookie goaltender Louis Domingue, who played really well. But also, the Jets are just not finishing. And there was a period of that game, a large chunk of that game, especially in the second period, the middle frame, where the Arizona Coyotes couldn't get out of their own zone. The Jets were doing everything that they needed to do. They were aggressive. They were using their speed well, I thought, against a Coyotes defense that isn't the most talented defense in the NHL. Sure, you got Ekman-Larsson there. He's one of the best young defensemen, but it's definitely not the New York Rangers.
But they're offensively inclined more than they are they are in their own zone.
Right, and you know, you got some good young players like Michael Stone of Winnipeg and all that, but I thought that the Jets were really set up nicely to take a couple points, or at the very least get 1 point. And that has been really the story of the season so far, the bad road record, the bad record within the Central Division, and the fact that they're not getting points in games that they're completely dominating, right? So it's another one of those games where you're upset from the outcome, and you maybe don't like some of the calls that went against you. I know that, you know, Paul Maurice after the game certainly wasn't happy with the fact that when Tyler Myers took a penalty, they didn't get the embellishment call going the other way.
Well, they got, and, you know, to preface that, let me interrupt you there, of course, because Nikolaj Ehlers earlier in the game was called for embellishment, a questionable call at best, I thought. And then, you know, in a similar situation, the Coyotes embellishment, which was clear to anybody who watched the game, the guy looked like he had his head shot off of his shoulders based on the little love tap that Myers gave. No call on the embellishment. The Jets end up shorthanded, and that's what leads to the Ekman-Larsson game-winning goal.
And Tobias, and the play we were talking about was in the third period, kind of midway through the third period, the Myers penalty on Tobias Reeder, and really, based on the way he kind of fell and his glove, you know, flies off of his hand, it seemed like it was some really you know, harmful play, but it really wasn't a good call, in my opinion, and you can't use that as an excuse. The Jets just couldn't find offense there when they needed that extra goal, and, you know, the Adam Lowry, Alexander Burmistrov, Andrew Ladd line was their best line, and the Blake Wheeler, Brian Little, Drew Stafford top line, they didn't necessarily have a bad game because they had their chances, and there were times where they had the Coyotes pinned in their own zone, and they were getting chances, but you needed a goal there. You needed to get at least a point out of that game, because the rest of this road trip is not going to be easy. You have the back-to-back here this weekend. Mm-hmm. You've got Dallas and Nashville, two teams that are playing pretty well this season. So it's going to be a really tough little stretch here for the Jets, because they just need to get points here. They can't come back from this road trip without at least 6 points, in my opinion.
Well, I would agree with your assessment there. They played so well in the two games right after Christmas on home ice against the Penguins and the Red Wings, two games where you saw them playing really to their potential and what people expected for the majority of the year. And then they go to Arizona and they play well. They play well for the majority of the game. They are the better of the two teams. And they just take undisciplined penalty after undisciplined penalty. And it costs them in that the Coyotes score two power play goals. And that's what proves to be the difference in the game. Let's hear from Jets coach Paul Maurice. I think, Rory, you got it up and ready. Here's Jets coach Paul Maurice after the game talking about the penalties, the undisciplined penalties the Jets continue to take.
Yeah, it was a difficult loss for us. And it should be, because we just dominated most of the game. And couldn't figure out the puzzle, you know. You can't touch them, and you can't dive. And we couldn't figure that out. So I don't know. I'm going to come up with a solution here in the next 24 hours, because we somehow are expecting things to change every night. And I don't know if they're looking for fairness or what the hell they expect is going to happen on the ice. But you've seen it enough. I mean, you can't take the penalties that we took. You just can't. About the calls, all you want, but if you're sitting there expecting consistency or quality, you're not coming to any of the games we play. So we took those penalties, and Ehlers dove on his. We got the call. That's a call. You expect them when going the other way. If you have that expectation, you haven't been in the league long enough, and we can't figure that out. We took the penalties. We lost the game. We were far better than they were for most of the night. That's the National Hockey League. That's probably enough for you. You guys can chew on that for a couple of days.
An unhappy Jets coach, Paul Maurice.
It wasn't a very good end to 2015 for Paul Maurice, because I don't think I've seen him that upset in a really long time. And quite frankly, Drew, I can't blame him. The way I thought the reffing was bad, and again, you can't use that as an excuse, but you know, he mentioned the Ehlers call where he got an embellishment penalty, and that was in the second period after Michael Stone hooked him down. I thought that was a bad call.
Yeah.
And then I thought Tyler Myers' call shouldn't have been roughing, and if it was going to be roughing, then you got to throw in the embellishment penalty to Tobias Reeder. You got to call it both ways, right? So I'm not really that surprised after the game when he's kind of short with the media and he kind of storms off and dropped a little four-letter bomb there.
But, it was actually a five-letter bomb.
Five-letter bomb, yeah. I think, yeah. I think we know.
A female dog, I think, is what he was referring to in with that curse
Come on,
word.
Drew, we have young listeners, so
yeah,
we don't want to...
I said female dog. You know, it's up to the parents to let to fill him in at that point in time. You know, as much as I understand why he's upset, I mean, I think that he bears some of the responsibility for this, as he, you know, this has been, what, 18 months now? You know, a season and a half where the Jets have been undisciplined? And where they've been taking minor penalty after minor penalty after minor penalty. So why does he expect? I mean, he says that, you know, the players can't expect to get the benefit of the doubt. And I'm not sure what you know, I'm not sure how you tell players to absolutely never retaliate. Because, you know, you're in the motion of the game, and I know you have to be smart. And you have to be smarter than the opponents, who obviously know you can get under the Jets' skin and force them into those penalties. But I think to some extent he's created that culture where the Jets are, you know, always finishing their checks. Last year it was, you know, a ton of physicality that would lead to penalties. This year they're much less physical. They just take, you know, undisciplined penalties. To some extent, I think the players definitely bear the majority of the responsibility, but I think he bears some of it as well.
You're right. It's an equal split, if you want to call it that, between coaching, who is responsible for the players' actions, in addition to the players taking responsibility for their own actions. But they are responsible for preparing these guys for the games, and that includes in-game situations, right? Mm-hmm. So I agree with you, Drew. And for me, you know, these penalties, I think, you know, we've talked about them ad nauseum, as you mentioned, for the last year and a half.
Yeah.
But to me, it has something to do with the small margin of error that this team has right now. And that's because they're in last place in the Central Division.
Sure.
Every single point is so valuable. I mean, you have Dallas, who's almost at 60 points right now, and the Jets just can't afford to go into games now and not get a point. I mean, look at the Anaheim Ducks. They were able to go on the road and get five of a possible 6 points. They have no option. If they don't start picking up points, they're going to be out of the playoff race, right? And sure, they've managed to kind of stick around and stay relevant. But for me, these penalties are just compounded by the fact that the Jets aren't able to kill these penalties off, especially on the road. I mean, the Jets' penalty kill has been a problem all year,
yeah,
which it wasn't last year. It was better last year. I forget exactly where it was, but I believe it was top 10, or it was close to top 10.
It was good for, I think it may have ended a little bit less than that, but it was good, yeah, for a bulk of the year.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't, you know, third or fourth worst in the NHL.
Right.
And I mean, I don't think special teams are the be-all, end-all. I think 5-on-5 is where you're going to win the majority of hockey games. But the reality is the power play has also been bad for the Jets.
Yeah.
And so when they need a big goal, they haven't been able to get it. Didn't score any power play goals in Arizona. When they needed a power play goal there, you know, which could have potentially given them you know, a little cushion there in the second period, they weren't able to get a goal.
You're right.
And so, you know, it's been a problem all year. And, you know, Paul Maurice has clearly had enough of it, and the players have had enough of it. And I think, especially because it was Andrew Ladd that took that penalty.
The one that Tyler Myers takes doesn't bother me nearly as much as the one that Ladd takes.
He was helping out his teammates there. The roughing penalty you're talking about?
I'm talking about the Tyler Myers. Yeah, that's right. The roughing penalty that Myers takes that leads to the game-winning goal.
That was on John Scott, who's apparently...
No. I'm talking about the roughing against Tobias... Yeah, okay. Against Tobias Reeder.
You're talking about the third period penalty. The second period penalty.
I'm talking about the third period penalty, yeah, that Myers takes. That one doesn't bother me as much as the one that Ladd takes. The one that Ladd takes, it's at the end of the period. It's the end of the second period. The whistle's already gone. He just goes and he cross-checks Ekman Larson for no good reason. Like, there was nothing... There was no, like, heat of the battle there. It's just, you know... It was just undisciplined.
The timing could not have been worse.
And, you know, and what happens? The Coyotes open the third period on a power play, and they score. And it could have very easily been the game-winning goal, except for the fact that Demeen gave the puck away to Lowry, and he was able to tie it up. It's just, you know, what, you know, some penalties you say, okay, I understand why he did that. I understand where the emotion came from there. This one, you know, they're pretty much skating off to the benches at the end of the period.
And, you know, Drew, the Jets, you got to give them credit, though. They have done a better job, I would say, over the last, let's say, 3 or 4 weeks of taking less penalties in the Pittsburgh game. They only took two penalties, and I thought they did a great job of staying out of the box against a team that they've have a history of penalties.
Fisticuffs with the game last year at the MTS.
So I thought the Jets were you know, kind of on the right track, and then they go out on the road and they take a bunch of penalties. And let's be honest, Andrew Ladd especially is under the microscope right now. We're not sure if he's going to re-sign and sign a contract extension. And, you know, he's been taking some bad penalties. You remember against the Rangers game, and he took a penalty, and then he got demoted on the third line there, and then he scored the empty net goal. They ended up winning that game. But I think just the timing and the kind of fragile state of this team right now is just, it's a situation where they just can't afford to take penalties, and when they do, they seem to always get scored on. So it's a big problem, and they got to fix that, and they got to fix that really on this road trip right now. They don't have the luxury of, it's not early in the season now. You're almost at the midway mark of the season, so they got to stay out of the penalty box starting tonight against San Jose.
Game time, 9 o'clock against the Sharks, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll preview tonight's Jets-Sharks contest. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent, as he just had his Team Canada Drew Doughty jersey customized. I guess it was a blank Team Canada jersey, and you went with Doughty on the back of it.
Yeah, it's a 2014 Olympic jersey, and it looks amazing. Drew Doughty was phenomenal in that tournament, and they did a great job there. I was actually hanging out with them on New Year's Eve when I picked it up.
Yeah.
Checked out their shop in Osborne Village, and it was great. They have so many cool jerseys there, and it was great to end the old year with those guys and pick up my jersey just in time for the outdoor hockey season.
There you go. A number of Team Canada players on the San Jose Sharks. The Jets' opponent tonight at 9 p.m. here on TSN 1290. Mark Edward Vlasic, of course, Joe Thornton, long history, Patrick Marleau, Logan Couture, both all with a long history with Team Canada. The Jets and the Sharks.
Brent Burns, too.
Yeah,
the World Championships.
Yeah, Brent Burns, too.
And the juniors.
Sharks are, you know, are led offensively, certainly, by Joe Pavelski. He's got 38 points in 36 games so far this season. Logan Couture, an injury-riddled season. He's only played 6 games. As he's been out with a leg injury for a lot of the year. The Sharks are an interesting team, an interesting dynamic, in that they're actually the polar opposite of the Jets, in that they're terrible on home ice. They have the fewest number of home ice victories this season, a record of 5 wins and 10 losses at home. Meanwhile, the Jets, 6-13-1 on the road. Something's going to have to give when these two teams face off tonight at the SAP Center in San Jose?
It is.
Okay, there you go.
And, you know, you mentioned polar opposites, Drew, and the San Jose Sharks have actually been excellent on special teams. They've got a top 5 power play, and their penalty kill is 10th in the NHL. They've just been inconsistent the entire year, and they had a good start to the season. And you mentioned, you know, they're led again by Joe Pavelski and the usual suspects, Brent Burns, Patrick Marleau, Joe Thornton, who, of course, have 1 year left on their contracts after this year and have been on the Sharks for many years now, especially Patrick Marleau. But it's just been inconsistency, and, you know, they've had problems on defense. They haven't had balanced scoring. They're still trying to figure out, I think, the makeup and the identity of this team. Because you watch them, and sometimes they look kind of like those old Sharks, led by Thornton and Marleau, and, you know, lots of speed, and they can hurt you on the power play, and kind of they've always been led and kind of structured their team from the goal out. And, you know, Martin Jones has done a nice job there, and he's a good goalie. Of course, you know, this is post Antti Niemi, who went to Dallas.
Yeah, Jones acquired in the offseason from Boston via Los Angeles, or from Los Angeles via Boston, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, this defense, you know, is, they brought in Paul Martin, and it's kind of a transition year of sorts. You know, you've still got Brent Burns, and you mentioned Mark-Edward Vlasic, and Brendan Dillon's a good defenseman, but it's still a defense that I think at trouble has defending. And, you know, you mentioned the home record, and the Jets have to be going into this game. And even though the Sharks won their last game 4-2 against Philadelphia, and they've, you know, turned it up a little bit here in the last couple of weeks of December, it's still a team that I think is vulnerable. And I'm not sure if I have a good read on the Sharks team.
They're top heavy offensively. I mean, you look at it, and I mean, they sort of load up the top two lines are filled with guys you've heard of: Marlowe, Couture, Thornton, Pavelski. Joe Ward came over from Washington. He's fit in very well second line. And Thomas Hertl was supposed to sort of be that next up and coming player. He burst onto the scene. He had that great sort of rookie season, and he sort of never really recaptured that so far in his NHL career. But you look at their bottom six, and there's nothing really there in terms of offensive capabilities that's tremendous. So similar to the Jets, a two-line team really that you have to be afraid of for the most part.
When I saw that the Sharks signed Denias Zubras, yeah, I almost fell out of my chair when I was, I guess I was sitting down at the time, but the point being that
it's only surprising that you weren't lying down, really.
Well, Zubras didn't do anything for the Devils the last 2 or 3 years he was there. I mean, he was getting paid quite a bit of money for a guy who was really a third or fourth liner, and, you know, that's partly due to some injuries, but, you know, you mentioned some of the players that they expected to take the next step, you know, Thomas Hertl was certainly one of them. Matt Nieto has kind of struggled being on the third line there for the Sharks. But you're right, Drew. It's a team that, you know, is pretty top heavy, and they can't blame the division they're in, because right now the Arizona Coyotes are surprisingly second in the Pacific Division. So sure, it's not like they're in one of the harder divisions. I mean, if the Sharks are in the Central Division, they're probably behind the Jets.
Well, the Sharks, yeah, the Sharks have 38 points in 36 games. The Jets have 36 points in 37 games. But you're right. You flip-flop them. You put the Jets in the Pacific, and they're a much better team. The Sharks would be struggling if they were in the Central Division. You know, it's not a bad matchup for the Jets, I think, in that the, you know, you take your top two pairing defensemen, you take, you know, Myers and Enstrom, and you take Bufflin and Trouba, and you throw them out there against the top two forward lines of the Sharks. And then the bottom pairing for the Jets, the Sherratt and Stewart pairing, if you can get them on the ice against one of the bottom six forward groups of the one of the bottom six forwards of the Sharks, you're okay with that. It's really a matchup, really. Same with, you look at the Sharks' defense, you know, Martin and Burns, Vlasic and Braun, they're going to go up against the Jets' top two offensive lines. And it's going to be a battle of, you know, who wins out, the top 4D on which team, the top six forwards on which team. I think that's going to be the difference in tonight's contest.
Yeah, and you mentioned Logan Couture earlier. He came back last game against the Philadelphia Flyers. He had actually missed 17 games, so he's been out more than half of the season, and they've really missed him. So they're going to benefit from having Logan Couture in this game, and they obviously did in the victory over the Philadelphia Flyers. But you're right. I mean, the matchups, I mean, you got the big line, as you mentioned, with Thornton, Pavelski, and I would probably agree that Enstrom and Myers would be paired up against them. And then I'd expect to see Bufflin and Trouba against Couture, Marlowe, and Ward. And then you'd probably have same thing, first line against first line, second line against second line, where you probably have Adam Lowry up against the Couture line. And I think Adam Lowry has actually done a really good job there as second line center. And of course, when Bart Scheifele comes back, then you have a decision to make. Do you move Lowry back to the wing on the third line? You're certainly going to move him back to the third line and expect that Scheifele goes back to playing with Perreault and Stafford, and maybe Ladd goes up to the first line. But you got to give Lowry credit. He has a demotion, then comes back, and he's been good in the three games since he's been back.
He certainly has been. I'll give him credit for that. He's been more of the Adam Lowry you would have expected from the start of the year, in that he's been noticeable. He's played, you know, used his big body, been defensively responsible, got two goals against the Coyotes. You don't expect him to get, you know, two goals in a game, but he did so. And I mean, I think the demotion seems to have done him well. So, you know, when Scheifele's back, and he could be back as early as tomorrow against the Ducks, that's when he's eligible to come off of the IR. He is skating with the Jets. He is on the road trip. So you would expect that he's going to be back sooner rather than later. It will lead to an interesting question for Paul Maurice, and what does he do? I assume Matthew Perreault is not going to remain as a centerman, and Perreault will go back to the wing on the Jets' third line, but I don't know what Maurice has in store or what his plans are. because the, you know, the way Lowry's been playing, I don't see the benefit. If you expect Lowry to be a center of the future for this team, I don't see the benefit of putting him back on the wing after he's played pretty well since coming back up from the Manitoba Moose.
And again, Drew, it's a good problem to have, right?
Sure.
Because I actually think that the Perreault-Ehlers-Thorburn line has looked pretty good in the three games that they've been together. Yeah, ideally, you probably want Chris Thorburn on the fourth line, but hey, he's been on the third line for most of the year, and you know, he's done a nice job, but you probably want to add a little bit more offense to that line.
Well,
but again, this is a good problem to have, right?
That's what I'm saying.
Perreault and Lowry can both play center or wing.
Yeah.
So really, you're just moving pieces of the puzzle around, and they should end up working because you have the luxury of Scheifele being your only injured forward. So he comes back, and Lowry goes down to the third line. But I think the key there is to get Ehlers going. I think Adam Lowry and Alexander Burmistrov have benefited from having Andrew Ladd on that second line, even though he took the penalty. Mm-hmm. I think that line was clearly the best line for the Jets against the Coyotes.
And then Burmistrov had a particularly good game against the Coyotes on Thursday
night. Yeah, and he was good at both ends of the ice.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ehlers, I think he has a little bit more chemistry with Matthew Perreault, and I think they feed off of each other more than he does with Burmistrov.
Well, I was saying to you before the show, you know, if you're going to put Perreault and Ehlers together, and that's going to be a skill line, Ehlers is 6 feet, but he's, a very slight 6 feet, and Perreault's less than that.
Ehlers I've stood beside Ehlers. He's 5'10 at most.
Exactly.
Maybe 5'9. Because I'm 5'9.
He's 6 feet in,
maybe on skates.
Maybe. Exactly. In hockey reporting, metrics, he's 6 feet. I don't really believe he is either. I'd like to see Armia up on that line with Perreault and Ehlers. Make that a real skilled third line. I've been cautiously impressed with what Armia's done on the fourth line so far. So I can see him, why not give him some chance to play with some skill players? Chris Thorburn can do what Chris Thorburn does on any line for this team. I wouldn't mind seeing Armia with get a chance with some more skill, get some more minutes, and see if Perreault, Ehlers, and Armia could possibly be a third scoring line for the Jets that they've been craving so desperately all season long.
Yeah, and I wouldn't disagree with you, Drew, and you look at the game day lines and the practice lines, they're going with the same lines,
sure.
But I think especially if you don't see any production, pardon me, out of that third line, then yeah, Armia is probably the natural guess as to who would go on the third line, and then you drop Thorburn down with Kopp and Halaschuk there, and Thorburn can play the right wing.
The fourth line is still going to be the same. It's going to be the same fourth line,
yep,
if it's Armia or if it's Thorburn.
So look for that if the Jets aren't able to generate any offense from that third line. And it's been a problem all year. We've talked about it. That has been one of the bigger problems for the Jets,
mm-hmm,
has been the lack of production from the third and fourth lines, with the exception of Thorbs, of course, who's, yep, rocking it with 5 goals. But, Ehlers has 1 goal in his last 26 games, right?
Sure.
And Lowry, has been able to chip in a couple goals and get up to 3 goals on the season, but he certainly wasn't producing before his demotion to the AHL. So that's a key tonight against a Sharks team that I think, even though, that defense is good offensively, I think, especially in the bottom pair, you can start to work them down low. And it's a team that we talked about has had trouble at home. So hopefully the Jets can have 4 good lines going tonight.
We will talk more about the San Jose Sharks next with Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
I'm ready for you.
Shortly after 3:30 in the afternoon, Saturday, the 2nd of January, 2016, Drew Mandel alongside Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program from the San Jose Mercury News, Curtis Pashelka. Curtis, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
Curtis obviously brought you on to preview tonight's Jets-Sharks game at the SAP Center in San Jose. The Sharks, I guess it's fortunate that they play in the Pacific Division and that they're still right in the thick of things with their 18-16-2 record. Very good on away from San Jose, but terrible on home ice with a 5-10 mark at home. What's been the biggest problem on home ice so far this season?
Well, I think, you know, obviously not having Logan Couture for a good chunk of that time has probably had a big effect on the team. But, you know, obviously he was missing in those road games too. I think the Sharks, when they've gone on the road, they've tried to simplify their game a little bit. They've gotten good goaltending. So there's been a few reasons why they haven't really played well at home. They played well on the road. As far as not playing well at home, you know, I think they've fallen behind in most of those games. They fought back a few times, but I think for the most part, they once they fall behind, they it's really tough. They've been tough for them to sort of catch back up. So, kind of a few reasons why they haven't been playing well at home. But they tend to think, you know, with Couture back, that things will be a little bit more back to normal, where they start to become a pretty good home team again.
Now, Curtis, you mentioned Logan Couture and how much they've missed him, especially on home ice, and he just came back from an injury, missed quite a few games, and immediately contributed against the Philadelphia Flyers in that 4-2 win. So I guess it's safe to say that his first game back was a pretty good one?
It was a pretty good one. I mean, I think Pete Spoor wanted to sort of manage his minutes a little bit. Normally, Couture is a big part of the penalty kill, too. But, the Sharks got some power play time, especially in the third period. And, that five-man unit of himself, Pavelski, Burns, Marleau, and Thornton have basically played together for the past 4 or 5 years. So they kind of know where each other's going to be on the ice at any given time. And they kind of really, kind of slid back into their old habits, right away once Couture got back. So he's obviously going to be a big boost to the power play. I think in time he's going to be a big boost. The penalty kill as well, and obviously help a little bit on Eden strength too.
Now, Curtis, I remember last time we had you on, we were talking about Patrick Marleau, of course, and at that time there were a lot of trade rumors swirling around. I guess, have those trade rumors started to die down a little bit as the weeks and months have passed, and has that been any type of distraction for this team, in your opinion, this year?
Not initially right after everything became public kind of thing. I think at the time it was something that a lot of guys had to talk about, Patrick himself included, had to talk about it too. So, but you're right. I mean, things have kind of died down since then. I mean, you've seen in the NHL, there's only been two trades so far this year. They haven't really been really big ones. So, it's died down for now. I think, depending on what the Sharks do over the next month or so leading into the trade deadline, the things might fire back up a little bit. But yeah, you're right. For now, things have kind of calmed down. I think Patrick is, he's having a really good year so far. He's bounced back from last season. He's been one of the more consistent forwards anyway. So I think if Doug Wilson's going to trade him, he's got to get a lot in return because the Sharks obviously want to make the playoffs. After missing him last year, and Patrick's been a pretty key ingredient so far this season.
Curtis Pashelka is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the San Jose Sharks ahead of tonight's Jets-Sharks game in San Jose. Curtis, I wanted to ask you about Brent Burns. Sort of under the radar, he's having a tremendous year for the Sharks, 33 points in 36 games. We know he was offensively inclined, but how impressed have you been with the performance of Brent Burns this season? And then second part of that question, a little bit of a controversy about a hit he delivered on Chris Vandeveld on Thursday against the Flyers. What were your thoughts on the hit that he laid on Vandeveld? We know Flyers coach Dave Hextall did not think that it was a clean hit.
Right. I mean, when you look at it in replay in slow motion, there does seem to be a little bit of contact with the head. I think Vandeveld, most of his injury might have come from the fact that he hit his head. It appeared to hit his head in the back of his head on the ice when he fell down. So, but you're right. I mean, it was, I think Dave Hextall had a little bit of reason to be upset. Talking to Burns afterward, he felt he caught most of Vandeveld's midsection, most of his body, and didn't make direct contact with his head. Looking at it in slow motion, time after time, it's tough to say, if a penalty should have been called. It happened really quick. So my thought was that, at the time it was probably a good no call. And I think the league looked at it and said, it was more of a hockey hit instead of making direct contact with the head. As far as Burns' performance so far this season, you're right. I mean, he's had a really breakout year. I mean, last year, I think he was still getting used to being back on the blue line after spending, you know, close to a year and a half as a forward. So I think that transition's, complete. I think he's more comfortable back on the blue line now than he was last season. And, he's also found a really good partner in Paul Martin. I think Paul has kind of helped him as far as being a real stabilizing force. You know, last season, you know, Brent was paired a lot with, Matt Irwin. And Matt Irwin liked to shoot the puck, too. So Paul Martin's a little bit different defenseman. He's not so offensively inclined. He's more apt to pass the puck instead of shoot it. So Burns is able, I think it's given Burns a little bit more free reign, given more opportunities to shoot the puck. And a lot of those, a few more of those shots are fine in the back of the net, too. So, he's had an outstanding year. I tend to think he's going to be in the All-Star game, here in a few weeks and continue to kind of get the recognition that maybe he's been lacking over the last couple of years.
And don't worry, Curtis, he's going to have a great captain in John Scott. So how would you rate Pete DeBoer's first 36 games as a head coach of the San Jose Sharks?
You know, I think he's pushed most of the right buttons. I think he knows when to ease off on these guys, and he knows when to lay into them too a little bit. Perfect example was, a couple of weeks ago when the Sharks were in Toronto, they played really well in the first period, kind of got sloppy in the second period. In between the second and third period, DeBoer really lit him up in the dressing room, and so the Sharks came out in the third period and played really well, and so. I think he has the year of the players, considering the injuries, some of the injuries the Sharks have had, to be in the position they're in, where they're, still, I think they're still in the mix for that second spot in the division. I think he's done pretty well so far. I think the transition from Todd McClellan to him is pretty much complete. There's a few other things I think he'd like to put his stamp on, but. For now, I think it's been a pretty good fit for both sides.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest, Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News. Curtis, I wanted to ask you about Thomas Hertl, because I look at the Sharks and, obviously they have a ton of talent offensively on their top six, but their bottom six, a little bit lacking in offense. Hertl burst onto the scene a couple years ago. He had a tremendous start to his rookie campaign. It got cut short by injury, but he had 25 points in 37 games. Last year, 31 points, 82 games. This year, 15 in 35. Seems like the Sharks have been waiting for him to take another step forward and really become a bona fide offensive, a player in the league, and it just hasn't happened yet. Do you think he still has that skill set in him? And if so, why hasn't he taken the step forward that we saw in his rookie campaign?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think, maybe, like you mentioned, his start to his NHL career, I mean, maybe that threw some people off. I mean, maybe people began to sort of expect that from him, year after year, week after week, year after year kind of thing. But I don't know if he's there yet. I think he will eventually take that next step. I don't know if it's going to happen this season, perhaps sometime next season. When he, continues to get a little bit more comfortable in his role here. You're right, though. I mean, you would expect him to be a little bit more productive, especially in goal scoring. I know that's been, probably the biggest disappointment, so far this year as far as, his production from that standpoint. So I don't know if it's going to happen this year. I do suspect it'll happen at some point, probably next season, I'm guessing. But obviously this year's not over yet. I mean, he's still got time to sort of, contribute, can give the Sharks a little bit more of a depth, a little bit more depth as far as scoring goes. Because right now it's, it's just a handful of guys. It's Joe Pavelski, it's Patrick Marleau, it's Joe Ward, Brent Burns, obviously. But no one really beyond that top six, the top two, three defensemen. So, I think Hurdle's got it in him. He just has to show it at some point.
Now, Curtis, you mentioned the trade deadline earlier, and it's less than 2 months away, and we talked about Patrick Marleau and how he was kind of being considered by trade bait. He was certainly on the TSN trade bait list. Maybe that isn't so much the case now, but when you look at the Sharks team, the fact that they're just a few points behind the Coyotes for second place in the Pacific Division right now, what do you think this team is missing, and who do you think they might target if they are still in the same position around kind of the second or third seed in the Pacific Division, still fighting for a playoff spot? What is this team missing that they might try to acquire before the trade deadline?
Well, if you look at it, I mean, you figure the road to the conference finals got to go through L.A., and L.A. is a big, heavy team. Now, the Sharks have played pretty well, you know, for the most part against the Kings so far this year. They've won two of the three games they play. Both of the games are at Staples Center. So I think if you're looking to turn out a matchup against the Kings in a seven-game series, you probably need to get a little bigger. You know, the Sharks have some big bodies on the team, there's no doubt about it. But I think if you're looking to add a piece, it's probably going to be a big, kind of a big winger that they could slot in, maybe that third line. He's going to chip in a little bit, you know, some scoring here and there, but more or less just kind of be a good forechecker, be a guy who can match up against some of the Kings' top fours, especially on the defensive side, you know, good along the wall, that kind of thing. So I would tend to think if they're going to add a piece, they're going to go out and add a piece, it's going to be a big kind of body. Obviously, they'd love to add a defenseman too. But defensemen are a little bit harder to come by, as everybody knows. It's hard to trade for a top four defenseman right now. So unless they willing to give up a good young piece. So I tend to think that if they're going to add something before the trade deadline, it's going to be kind of a bigger body to sort of help match up against the Kings once the playoffs roll around.
Curtis, we'll let you go on this last question. It's sort of hard to believe it's been almost 41 games, but at the 41-game mark, Rafi Torres is eligible to return from his half-season suspension. Do the Sharks have a spot for him in the lineup? Are they going to welcome him back with open arms? Or what's in store for Rafi Torres when he's eligible to return to the Sharks 5 games from now?
Well, they're going to welcome him back. No, I think that they're probably going to have to, you know, have him skate a little bit with the American League team here, the Barracuda, for, you know, 2 or 3 games to sort of get his conditioning back, get his timing back, that kind of thing. That'll at least buy him a little bit more time before they have to make a real roster decision to bring Rafi Torres back. You know, I mean, just kind of looking at the roster right now, it's tough to single out one guy that they could probably, you know, move down. I think Ben Smith would probably be a candidate to go down to the American League once Rafi Torres comes back. Ben Smith's kind of been a healthy scratch here the last couple of games. You know, as obviously he's been injured this year too. He's had concussion symptoms for 4 or 5 weeks or so, and so he could be a candidate to go down once Rafi Torres comes back. But yeah, definitely once he's eligible to return, play games, he'll be back as part of the organization, probably 2 or 3 games with the American League team, and then back with the Sharks towards the end of the month here.
Curtis Pashelka covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. Curtis, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon, and enjoy tonight's Jets-Sharks game in San Jose.
All right, will do. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Curtis. Thanks very much.
Curtis can say he was the first guest of 2016, too.
Could. I'm sure that he's going to put that right onto his bio.
Twitter bio.
Yeah. Anyways, let's head to break. When we come back, has the Winnipeg Jets core, the key 5 core members, been together for too long? We'll ask the question next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Works hard. I kind of got to see him grow into a player and a leader out there. He's one of our hardest workers every night and hardest workers in practice. So, I kind of got to watch him grow into the, you know, player he is today.
Brian Little discussing Blake Wheeler. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, 10 minutes before the top of the hour. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper-fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Ezzy, you have an interesting piece up on illegalcurve.com exploring the idea if the Jets core, the five sort of core members of this team, the Ladd, Little, Wheeler, Bufflin, Enstrom, Pavlik to some extent as well, but as a goalie, you're sort of separate from the on-ice players. If they've been together for too long, if it's time to take the opportunity of Ladd and Bufflin's free agency, pending free agency, to maybe shake up that core of the Jets organization. You know, you good piece on Illegal Curve. We'll tweet out a link to it. Talk about your thoughts behind writing it. Why did you want to? What did you explore when you were coming? When you were trying to answer that question?
Yeah, and I kind of started putting this article together about a week ago.
Sure.
And it's pretty topical and timely right now with the upcoming decision that has to be made by Kevin Cheveldayoff in regards to Andrew Ladd and Dustin Bufflin's future, right?
But less than 2 months to go.
Less than 2 months, right? And kind of, I wanted to just kind of provoke some thought as far as Andrew Ladd and Dustin Bufflin go in terms of that Atlanta association and how really this is the veteran core of the team. And, you know, even with Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian, who are a few years younger, of course, are traded now.
Sure.
But this group of Ladd, Little, Wheeler, Enstrom, Bufflin, and Pavlik, I even threw in there, but really I kind of focused on the players out of those six, I guess, and focused on the five. But really, if one of these players isn't with the Winnipeg Jets next year and moving forward, it really will be the end of an era, right? Because these have been the top players. You're talking about the three top forwards, mm-hmm. and certainly the two best offensive defensemen, and maybe Tobias Enstrom's numbers have fallen off over the last couple of years. Certainly this year he's struggling with only one goal and 8 or 9 points or whatever it is now.
Yeah, 9 points.
But, I mean, again, and I don't think that there's an answer. And in the article, I don't really come to any conclusion. In fact, I mentioned that over the months that we've been talking about the Andrew Ladd and Dustin Bufflin contract extensions, I've been in favor of keeping them both. And I could make a strong argument for keeping both, and you could even simplify it down to these are the two most important players on the team, with maybe the exception of Blake Wheeler. And replacing them is going to be very difficult. And, you know, I touched on that really it's going to come down to the numbers. And Tim Campbell wrote about it about 3 weeks ago, that they are just asking for too many years, especially when it comes to Dustin Bufflin. I think they'd be willing to go maybe 6 years with Andrew Ladd. I don't know if they'd be willing to go 6 years with Dustin Bufflin. I think they might say 4 or 5 is enough. But the point is, after this year, we'll know if the majority of that core is going to stay together. And I guess, sure, we know that 3 of 5 of those players aren't going anywhere because Wheeler's got 3 years left, and then Little and Enstrom have 2 years left. But a big part of it, let's put it that way, there's a possibility that half of that core is not going to be there next year. So I think it's an interesting way to look at it, that if the Jets don't sign one of these guys, it is going to be kind of a changing of the guard, right? Because you've got, you know, players like Scheifele and Lowry and Trouba and Ehlers. Really, that's going to be the future core of the team, if it's not already. If you want to separate it into veteran core and young core. Yeah. But I just think it's an interesting way to look at it, because you're talking about your captain and your most impactful player, certainly physically, in Dustin Bufflin. So no right or wrong answer. I just kind of wanted to open it up to discussion.
I think an interesting, you know, if you look at it from the Andrew Ladd perspective, we know the Jets have a lot of talent on the right side of their defense. So we know that, you know, Dustin Bufflin, well, he's certainly impactful. I think that the minutes he plays and the minutes he logged are replaceable from within what they currently have, you know, with Myers and with Trouba both being on the right side of the defense. But, you know, let's say Andrew Ladd is traded between now and the trade deadline. And if he is, you can pretty much assume that this year is a lost year. Fine. So forget about this season. Next year, who's playing that, you know, the top line left wing minutes for this team? Because there's nobody coming up from the AHL that's going to be eligible, that's going to be able to log the significant minutes and the significant, you know, best on best competition that Andrew Ladd plays night in, night out. And the prospects, I mean, sure, you know, maybe that's Brendan Lemieux, you know, 3 years, 4 years down the road from now. But, you know, if Andrew Ladd's not on this team next year, it's And, you know, who are they going to replace him with in free agency, A, if that's an option, or B, I mean, who's playing those minutes? And I don't see that there's sort of a built-in, readily available replacement for the, you know, the significant time on ice, the 20 minutes a game that Andrew Ladd logs for this team. And you just don't see who's coming in to play those minutes.
Yeah, and you know, it would be natural for probably Matthew Perreault to become your first-line left winger, and then Nikolai Ehlers moves up potentially to play left winger, your second line. But, Drew, your point is well taken.
Matthew Perreault's never played first-line minutes in the NHL.
No, and he's not the same impactful player that Andrew Ladd is, especially physically and penalty kill. You know, he's been great on the power play. But Matthew Perreault, with all due respect, is not Andrew Ladd. Great player. He has a lot of assists this year. He's having a great season, had a great year last year. But he certainly doesn't have the resume with the Stanley Cups that Andrew Ladd has, especially the veteran leadership and all that. But that's another reason for signing both or at least one of these players, because it's going to be tough to replace them. And does that set you back next year? And to me, that is the biggest dilemma that Kevin Cheveldayoff is facing, that most likely when you're trading one of these guys, if you are, you're not going to be getting a player of equal value. You're going to be getting a sum, which would include a first-round pick, a prospect, and a roster player.
But nobody who's... Like, I mean, if you trade Andrew Ladd, and or if you trade Dustin Byfuglien, less so Byfuglien because of you have Myers and Trouba, but if you're trading one of those two players, I think you're almost... It's not a reset. You're not rebuilding the team, but you can't expect that the Jets are going to be a playoff team next year, maybe even for 2 years, if you're trading a guy who's playing your top-line left-wing minutes night in, night out, and you don't have a built-in, ready guy to replace him. I mean, can Drew Stafford potentially play some of those minutes? Sure, I guess. But he's never really been... He's never been an Andrew Ladd. He's not built to be the Andrew Ladd player on this team. He's more of a second-line player, and that's what he's been, and I think he's perfectly suited for that role.
And the issue, Drew, then becomes... As well, if you're not going to get, let's say, a situation where it's a one-for-one trade, where you get a bona fide top six forward, or let's say a bona fide top four defenseman in return, if you're trading one of these players, then the question is, well, then can you go on the free agency market and can you get a player that can fill one of those roles? And that's been tough for the Jets. The biggest free agent signings for the Jets have been Olli Jokinen and Matthew Perreault, right? Jokinen didn't work out very well there for years 2 and 3 in Winnipeg. So Matthew Perreault has been a great signing. He's a top six forward, I would say. Are you going to now leave it to that you can pick up another player, he's going to be able to fit in? And that's why I don't think you can lose either one of these players. And I've been a proponent of signing both of them. Now, money is going to have an impact on whether that happens, because when you're talking about the salary cap, are you going to be able to pay Ladd and Byfuglien 5 or 6 years, making $7+ million a year each, with knowing that Trouba and Scheifele are going to be getting raises, and then you have Lowry and Ehlers 2 years from now or so getting raises, right?
Yeah.
It's going to all come down to that. So
negotiations are all about leverage, and I would say right now the leverage certainly lies with both Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien in their camps, as opposed to Kevin Cheveldayoff, who is looking at two very difficult situations that are going to have to come to a head in the next 2 months. Let's head to break. When we come back, Steve Goldstein, Florida Panthers broadcaster, is going to join us. The Panthers are second in the Atlantic Division, one of the surprises of the NHL. We'll talk to him next about it on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Brought to you by Not Auto Corp. Visit the new luxury auto and art gallery at Waverly and McGilvery. This is TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg.
Crossley score!
Your home of the Winnipeg Jets.
Jets on the board!
A division of Bell Media. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Second hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Ezra Ginsberg. Richard Pollock away from the program today. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and your home for Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to be joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Steve Goldstein. Steve is the Florida Panthers play-by-play broadcaster on Fox Sports Florida. Steve, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, how you doing, Drew? How you doing, guys? Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, as always. Brought you on to talk about the surprising Florida Panthers. Before the season start, they sort of might have been one of those picks, sort of an off-the-board pick from the team to make it into the playoffs in the Atlantic Division, maybe as a third or a fourth seed. But here we sit on the 2nd of January, and the Florida Panthers are 1 point behind the Montreal Canadiens for the top spot in the Atlantic Division with 3 games in hand. How surprised are you that the Panthers have been this good this early this season?
You know, I'm surprised by the run. I mean, this team's won 13 out of 16 games. They've won 7 in a row. I mean, that matches the franchise's longest winning streak. So, you know, where they are with the 46 points in the first 37 games really doesn't shock me. They were a 91-point team last year, and I thought, hey, you know what? A full year of Jaromir Jagr, a year older for Huberdeau and Ekblad, and obviously Alexander Barkov, yeah, that could add to one more win every 6-7 weeks, which, is 4 more wins a year, which takes you from 91 to 99. So I thought it was a possibility, but, when they got out of the gates a little bit slow, and they actually at one point lost 12 out of 17, not in regulation, but still 12 losses out of 17, you started to question a little bit. So it's not completely shocking to me that they have the 46 points at this point, but it's the way they got it. I would have thought it would have been a steady stream, with a pretty good start to the season. It was a questionable start, but lately, I've been around here since 97, since almost the franchise started, and I have never seen a Panthers team get on a run like this team has been on and play as well as they played, and getting contributions really from everywhere.
Steve, recently, I believe it was a couple of days ago, Gerard Gallant signed a 2-year contract extension, and I think that was probably a no-brainer for Dale Talon, especially considering they're in the middle of a 7-game winning streak. But do you think that Gerard Gallant is almost underrated for how good of a coach he is? And I guess, is it safe to say that he's probably a favorite right now to win the Jack Adams Trophy?
Well, he's got to be right up there. I know Lindy Ruff is going to get a lot of pub, and as well he should. He has the 2 great scorers, but, he's making those guys play defense. So we all know the job that Lindy does for years. By the way, Lindy was an assistant on the 96 Panther team that made the run to the Cup Finals.
That's right.
Because Blaine is coach. Gerard gets the 2-year deal. Dale Talon signed a 3-year extension. And then Tom Rowe, who, as you guys know, is a hockey veteran, has been basically everywhere over the last 25 years, including in the KHL. He had been coaching the Panthers team in the A. He is now up here as associate general manager. So all this has been announced, as you mentioned, the last couple of days. I think Gerard is a bit underrated. I think it's a great point that you bring up, because Gerard Gallant is the furthest thing from a me guy. It's all about the team. It's all about the players. He is very, there's literally no ego there. I think that's a big part of the reason why the guys want to play for him. But he's tough when he needs to be. And he knows the game. And, the patience he has shown over the last year and a half since he's been here with some of the younger players has really been remarkable. And there were a lot of fans that were really down on Jonathan Huberdeau, guys, as recently as 4 or 5 weeks ago. Now the guy is a set-up machine. I mean, Barkov and Jagr are scoring like crazy. Part of the reason is Huberdeau's feeding him the puck. So Gerard has been really good for this team. And the other thing he does is he knows he has these veteran players like Jagr and Mitchell and Luongo, and he lets them handle the room. And he knows, as a coach, you can't be going in that room every single day screaming at guys. They tune you out. They turn you off. Gerard Gallant goes in there, says what he needs to say, but on a regular basis, he lets the veteran players run that room. So I think he's got, he's been around for a while. He was in the NHL years ago with Columbus, then went down a junior and had the success winning the Memorial Cup in St. John. So he's been around. He's learned a lot through all the different jobs, and I agree with you. I think he's got the right formula right now as a head coach.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Florida Panthers play-by-play broadcaster Steve Goldstein, talking about the impressive Panthers so far this season. Steve, we have to talk about Jaromir Jagr. He keeps going almost at the age of 44. They acquired him last year from the Devils, sort of in a push to get into the playoffs. Fell a bit short, obviously. Signed him to a contract extension. Just how important has Jagr been to this very youthful Florida Panthers lineup?
In a lot of ways, and I don't want to disparage anybody else, but he's almost been close to everything. for this team. You know, when he is out on the ice, it raises not only everybody's game, but just the overall, the feel. And I feel it, too, as the announcer, the credibility of the franchise. You know, I still can't believe it, guys, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm announcing Jaromir Jagr's games. I mean, I was a season ticket holder for the Rangers 25 years ago, sitting up there in the blue seats booing Jagr when he and Lemieux came to Madison Square Garden. I mean, and now I'm announcing the games and calling historic goals. So what the guy does is he brings a level of credibility, and then you go in there and you see him work out. And, you know, the stories can get kind of legendary and take on a life of their own. I'm telling you, I've seen it firsthand. We were in Dallas. I get back, because, you know, the night before a game, I like to take it easy. I'm working the next day. I get back at 9:45. Who walks onto the elevator with a weighted vest coming from the gym? Jaromir Jagr. You know, this is what this guy does. So if you're a young guy, if you're, you know, good Branson, Petrovic, Huberto, Barkov, Ekblad, and you're seeing an hour after the game, Jagr's still in the weight room doing some work, well, what are you going to do if you're 20, 22 years old? You're going to get in there and work also next time. So it's almost hard to overstate how important he's been to these young guys. And then you go to the fact that he's also the leading scorer on the team. He's also been extremely productive. He's on pace for a 20-goal season.
Now, Steve, you mentioned some of the young players earlier, and you just mentioned Aaron Ekblad. I remember we had the good fortune to have Denny Potvin on, who, of course, you are very familiar with on the broadcast, and he said Aaron Ekblad is one of the best young defensemen he's seen in a long time, and that's coming from Denny Potvin, one of the greatest defensemen of all time. When you consider that, you know, he really hasn't missed a beat from last year when he won the Calder Trophy, he's got 18 points so far on the season. Just how good is he going to be? Is it multiple Norris trophies? I mean, how good could Ekblad actually be?
I think he's right in the ballpark with the Dowdies, the Webbers, and those guys. And I think he's going to be that good for 15, 20 years. Not only the physical ability, but the head on the shoulders. I mean, I've never seen an 18, now 19-year-old. The guy acts like he's 30. You know, he really does. The maturity he shows. And again, another guy that every morning skate, you know, he takes these shots. He doesn't wind up with the big slap shots. He takes these kind of the wristers and the little flick shots and the snap shots, and somehow they get through. And I look at it, and then I watch practice. And when there's three, four guys left on the ice at practice, and usually it's fourth liners and guys that aren't playing, Aaron Ekblad is still up there at the blue line practicing little shoulder fakes and getting that puck towards the net. It's not by accident that he has 9 goals and he's on pace for maybe a 20-goal season, which would be unbelievable from a 19-year-old guy. So from what I see, the sky's the limit. And as you say, I think he's going to be, you know, a top five guy for a long time and right in that conversation for the Norris every year.
Steve Goldstein is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the Florida Panthers play-by-play broadcaster on Fox Sports Florida. Steve, you look up and down the Panthers roster, and there's a litany of first-round selections. You mentioned Huberto, Sasha Barkov, Eric Gudbrandsson, Aaron Ekblad. But then you look, you know, that second-line center spot, sort of being anchored by Vincent Trocheck right now. He's a third-round pick. You know, I personally don't know a ton about Trocheck, but he's putting up points, 10 goals, 12 assists, 22 points for 37 games played. You know, who is Vincent Trocheck, and what has he brought to the Panthers lineup that's made him so indispensable?
Well, what I like about him is, and this is from day one, he's got that tenacity. You know, he's got that tenacity, that intensity on the ice every shift. So that's number one that you're getting from him, and right off the bat, everybody, you know, you love a guy that plays like that. Now, he was a huge scorer in junior. I mean, he won the Red Tilson Trophy. He scored, you know, 50 goals, over 100 points in junior. Was part of that U.S. team 2 years ago that won the World Junior. You know, that really good team that had all those great players on it. And he was a big factor in the gold medal game as well. So, and he scored in the AHL. So you knew he could score some goals. What's happened here, it's very intriguing, guys. And Bukestad, by the way, may be back tomorrow night against Minnesota.
That's a hell of an addition to the lineup.
Yeah, certainly. And then you throw 6-6, a guy that scores 25 goals in the lineup, you say, wow, how much better could you get? You know, what Trocheck has done is, you know, he earned his spot full-time this year. But remember, when the season started, he was still on the wing because it was Bukestad with Barkov and then Boland, who's now hurt, and Derek McKenzie. So, you know, Trocheck migrated back to his natural position where I feel he's played much better. You know, they had no choice to start the season but to play him on the wing. Now, centers his spot. He was the third-line center. Bukestad goes out. He's got to eat up more minutes. And I thought a big key was he goes on a line with UC Jokinen and Riley Smith. And we all know the Finns. You know, they play the game the right way. And UC Jokinen's about as smart a hockey player as you'll find. And Riley Smith, another pretty underrated guy, plays very well defensively. And Trocheck's game, especially defensively, has been elevated by the more ice time, the more focus. He's not under pressure to score, and he's kind of made that transformation in his mind from a junior player that scored 50 goals of, hey, you know what? If I score 15, 20 in the NHL, but I'm a plus player, I'm fine. And his game really complements, particularly Jokinen and Smith, because of where their position, without getting too technical, where their position in the defensive zone, it works well with Trocheck. So he has been absolutely super, and when Bukestad comes back, you talk about a three-headed monster, Trocheck, Bukestad, and Barkov, and they're all between 20 and 23 years old.
You know, Steve, you just mentioned Riley Smith, and of course that was one of the big moves the Florida Panthers made was trading Jimmy Hayes to Boston and getting Riley Smith back. Not many moves, actually, that the Panthers made in the offseason, I guess partly due to the fact that it's such a young team. But is it safe to say that Riley Smith is maybe a better fit for this Panthers team, which is kind of offense-first-oriented?
Well, certainly nothing against big Jimmy Hayes, and he serves his role, and he gets to the front of the net, and he's a huge guy, but Riley Smith is playing 18, 19 minutes a night. He's on the power play. He's on the penalty kill. He's got some speed. He's got 11 goals, not even halfway through the season. He has been a phenomenal fit for this team because you look at right wing, and, you know, before last season, remember, you know, Smith wasn't here and Jágr wasn't here. Now all of a sudden you got those two as your top two right wingers and then another draft pick from 2011, you know, a little later rounds, Logan Shaw is playing third line right wing. So they needed to improve on the right wing, and Smith, to me, is an underrated player. Didn't watch him, obviously, every shift when he was with the Bruins, but he does everything well. He's got the speed, really smart defensively, gets pucks out of the zone, and obviously when he's open, he could score. He had 20 a couple of years ago at Boston. He's pacing for that this year. So that was a huge move by the Panthers because of the all-around play that Smith brings to the table for this team at a position where they needed somebody to do it.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Steve Goldstein, Florida Panthers broadcaster. Steve, you know, we talked about the offensive talent up front for the Panthers, and it's enviable, you know, for many teams around the league. But, you know, it all sort of always goes back to goaltending. And with Roberto Luongo in the net for the Panthers, they have one of the best in the league. How important psychologically has it been for this young Panthers team to know that if they make errors, they have such solid goaltending behind them in Luongo that he's able to bail out some of their mistakes that are inevitable from being a young team?
Yeah, it's been huge. You know, Montoya's been great this year. Al was okay last year. This year he's 5-1-1. He's outrageous with a .930 save percentage. So that's helped a lot also. But yeah, obviously having that guy back there, you know, and Luongo's another one, first one on the ice, you know, works his butt off. He's, you know, one of the best players on this team, and he works as hard as anybody on the team. So another great veteran example, if you will. But, of course, you know, having him back there, they know, hey, the Panthers this year, when they score three goals or more, are 14-0-1. So they know they don't need to have a huge offensive game. Just cash in on a power play, get a couple even strength goals, and chances are you're going to wind up winning the game because Roberto's so solid back there, and he'll make the spectacular save. And, you know, once in a while, like everybody else, he'll give one up. But for the most part, he makes all the saves you expect him to make, and then, you know, a few great ones. And, boy, has he been great in the shootouts as well. That's been a big factor for this team. Now, they've won five consecutive shootouts, especially during this stretch where they've won 13 out of 16. So, you know, Luongo's on pace here for his best save percentage in 5 years since 2010 with the Canucks. He's really had a great first half of the season.
The Jets visit the Panthers at the end of February. It's a game we're going to be in attendance in Miami, so looking forward to seeing the Panthers up close and personal coming up next month. Steve Goldstein, Panthers play-by-play broadcaster, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon. And if our buddy Steve Warrior ever gives you any trouble, make sure you keep him in line. Just smack him around a couple times for us.
You know what? Now that I have the permission, I'm going to do that, and hopefully all 130 pounds of them soaking wet won't respond with a right hook. That's what I'm hoping.
You know, Steve, when we're down in Miami, as Drew mentioned, we'll invite you out for dinner, but Steve Warrior is going to have to make his own dinner plans.
Well, either that or he's got to bring that company credit card, which he pounds every single day. So either one, we're set. I don't know about him.
There you go. Steve Goldstein, Florida Panthers play-by-play broadcaster. Thanks very much for joining us. Have a good call of tonight's Rangers-Panthers game. And thanks very much for joining us again.
Great to be with you guys. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Ezra and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca. Yeah.
standing at the side of the road.
Heartbreak for Team Canada in Helsinki, Finland, earlier this afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Ezzy, a great battle earlier this afternoon between Canada and Finland in the quarterfinals at the World Junior Hockey Championships. And like every great hockey game, it seems to end with a 6-5 score. Unfortunately for Canada, this one, they're on the short end of that 6-5 score, falling in the quarterfinals, not making it to the semifinals of the World Junior Hockey Championship for, I believe, the first time in 15 years.
I think it was 1998. Was the last time
17 years then
that Team Canada didn't make it to the semifinals, Drew. But I thought that this tournament just really didn't get off to a good start, and it kind of never really did turn into a good tournament for Team Canada. And if you look at the game, you know, this morning, and I got up and watched the whole game, and I imagine most of the country was up watching that game, and Canada played well, and they kind of suffered the similar fate of the Winnipeg Jets when it comes to undisciplined penalties, mm-hmm. going up against a Finland team that was 50% on the power play heading into the game, and they scored a few more power play goals this morning. And, you know, I thought that Dylan Strome, Mitch Marner, picks number 3 and 4 in the 2015 draft were really good, and Travis Konecny was good, Philadelphia Flyers draft pick. But I thought that the goaltending was a big problem all tournament, and Mackenzie Blackwood missed the first two games due to his OHL suspension, and then he came in and, you know, he had the one win, but wasn't able to have a good game today, certainly against Finland. And you don't want to blame it all on Mackenzie Blackwood, but especially at certain points in that game when they really needed a big save, he wasn't able to provide that, right? Mm-hmm. So this
it's
Canadian
the story of team Canada and World Juniors for years, though. I mean, just not, the goaltending's never been there.
Well, they haven't had an elite goaltender for some time, but usually they were better in every other aspect, mm-hmm. and that's what was usually the reason why they were able to get gold last year and either silver or bronze in previous years, right? Because they hadn't won between 2009 and 2015. So to me, it was clearly an inexperienced team. You only had four players returning, and I just didn't think they really ever found their game. I mean, they defeated Denmark 6-1, but they had trouble in every single other game, right? And in this game in particular, even though they got off to the two-goal lead in the first period and seemed to really take out the crowd in Helsinki, I didn't really think they built off of that. And I thought that early on, kind of the staple of a Team Canada team, hard in the forecheck, not giving the opposition much room, and then they started getting into penalty trouble and were scrambling around in their own zone. And I think that, you know, the fact that Mackenzie Blackwood let in a few weak goals kind of didn't really help the cause. And, you know, you can look at this team and say that, you know, they were missing a Connor McDavid or this and that. But the reality is I didn't think that the defense was particularly good. I like Hayden Fleury's game, and Travis Sanheim of Elkhorn, he had a really good game. But I think the defense as a whole left a little bit to be desired. And I just don't think it was one of the better Canadian teams. And look, Drew, they can't win this tournament every single year. I think people expect Team Canada to win every year.
If Team Canada sent their best under-20 players, including the ones who are in the NHL, they would win this tournament every single year.
Right, but no country does that,
no,
right?
And that's why I never take a loss at the World Juniors too seriously, because it's not a best-on-best tournament. It's a best on very good tournament to some extent. You know, you look at individual performances, I think you have to say it's a disappointing performance for Jake Virtanen.
Yeah, did he have a point?
He had 1 point. He had one assist.
Yeah, so he had 1 point.
1 point. This is the guy who plays for the Vancouver Canucks, who was loaned from the Canucks.
Well, and it was the penalties that he took today.
Takes two penalties on the same shift today that leads to the Team Finland having a power play and a power play goal that leads to them getting the game-winning goal. You have to say, you know, a poor performance by Jake Vertanen of the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and he's still a top prospect of the Vancouver Canucks, but certainly for the only player on this team who had any NHL experience, it was certainly disappointing. Remember, Anthony Duclair was one of those players last year who, along with Max Domi, had a great tournament and, of course, playing for the Coyotes now, who Jets fans just saw a couple of nights ago. But there was something about this team that was missing a little bit. They weren't the biggest team. They weren't the most physical team. At times, they were physical. They were undisciplined. They just didn't really ever seem to all put it together. The only game was really the Denmark game, and that was against one of the worst teams in the tournament, even though they gave Russia a good run for their money today.
Sure.
But needless to say, I mean, they didn't play well against the Americans.
Yeah.
They didn't play very well against Sweden. And against Finland, even though you could say, you know, you get a couple of bounces here and there, or you stay out of the penalty box, they maybe win this game. But Finland was the better team, and they deserve to win.
You get one save from, Mackenzie Blackwood didn't really make any saves that I would describe as key saves at all during the game. And, you know, Canada, the World Juniors, when push comes to shove, the goaltending lately has always been a problem. I tweeted this out earlier, that it's amazing how far ahead, really on all teams, how far ahead the skaters are as opposed to the goaltenders. I think that speaks to the time it takes to develop goaltenders, top flight, bona fide NHL goaltenders. They don't just burst onto the scene for the most part. They do need years of seasoning. And Mackenzie Blackwood, a prospect with the Devils and still has a bright future ahead of him, but you could see he's not ready for real prime time. You saw that by his performance today for the Canadiens. Dylan Strome looked terrific. You mentioned Mitch Marner. He also looked terrific. But I would agree with you. Anytime the Canadiens played one of the power countries, Sweden, the United States, particularly in the preliminary round, they got blown out. It wasn't as close. I mean, they lost to the U.S., 4-2? They lost to Sweden 5-2?
Yeah, it was 5-2 against Sweden. And you're right, Drew. They didn't play well against the top teams, and that was the reason why they're ultimately not in the semifinals. But also, I mean, they lost to a good team here. When you're talking about Jesse Puljujärvi and Patrick Laine, you're talking about two guys that could potentially go top five in the 2016 draft. Kasperi Kapanen is a top prospect for Toronto. So, I mean, this is a very good Finnish team.
Sure.
And I think what we've seen maybe over the last, I'd say, 5 to 7 years maybe, is the gap has really shortened even more when you're talking about the World Junior Tournament. There just isn't a lot of room for error, especially when you get down to a best-of-one game elimination game. And, you know, even though the Canadiens had a lot of talent, I mean, Dylan Strome and Mitch Marner, they're going to be in the NHL next year.
Absolutely.
And you have a lot of other talented players on there. I thought Braden Point, who was the captain of the team, had a very nice tournament, good second-round pick for the Tampa Bay Lightning. So, I mean, there's a lot of players on this Canadian team that you're going to see in the NHL and elsewhere have really good, long, productive careers. But there was also holes in this team, and I think they didn't get enough offense from their defensemen, and I think at times defensemen were out of position.
Defense from the defensemen.
Right. The special teams weren't good,
yeah.
And it just wasn't it wasn't Canada's tournament this year, and that's okay. They won gold last year, and the tournament is back in Canada next year in Montreal and Toronto. There's no need to have a summit here.
Oh, please,
Canadian hockey is in very good hands.
Yeah.
Just, you can't win them all.
You can't win them all. What actually was more impressive to me, you know, it used to be that that Finland, as a country, when they'd play in international games, they were always very disciplined and defensive and structured and didn't have a ton of top-flight offensive talent. You see now that they're developing top-flight offensive players, and these players for Finland that were just absolutely dominant, Puljujärvi and Aho and Lane, are all going to be bona fide NHLers. And then you add, a guy like Sasha Barkov to that list of players. And, the Finnish national team in the next 4, 6, 8 years is going to be more than just sort of that scrappy underdog that can sometimes win a couple of key games. They're going to be an offensive juggernaut similar to the Swedes that we saw when they had Sundin and Forsberg and, that they have Carlson now. And, I can keep going and name Swedish players. I think you are seeing a transition in Finnish hockey in terms of the quality of high-quality offensive players they're putting out.
Right, and Finland has had great hockey players dating back to Jari Kurri and Teemu Selänne, but I think that you're right, Drew. I think especially with the top prospects they have in the 2016 draft, Puljujärvi and Laine are the two 17-year-olds that are going to go in the 2016 draft, certainly in the top 10. When you're talking about Puljujärvi, he'll probably go third or fourth overall. after Austin Matthews and after Jacob Chychrun. So you're talking about top prospects here. So Finnish hockey is in good hands, and I know that the Americans heading into the semifinals might be the favorite with the way they played in the quarterfinals, but I wouldn't count Finland out for that gold medal, especially in front of their home crowd.
Well, you saw a rowdy atmosphere between Canada and Finland today in Helsinki. Wait till Monday morning when it's Finland and Sweden, which is the equivalent of Canada-USA or Canada-Russia back in the 70s. It's going to be a fantastic atmosphere in Helsinki for the semifinals, U.S. versus Russia and Sweden versus Finland. Ted, to break, when we come back, we'll go to Helsinki and speak with Michael Trakos of the National Post about the World Junior Hockey Championship. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Curve Hockey Show, brought to you by Randall Plumbing. That's with two L's and 100 years experience. Visit randallplumbing.com. This is your Manitoba Moose Call. Catch every game live.